ABC Radio Australia.
Taking you to Kiribati now, where the small Pacific nation has achieved something remarkable. According to the latest SPC Pacific Community Poverty and Inequality Report, Kiribati has seen the national poverty rate plummet by 75%. It's being attributed to bold reinvestment strategies. So joining me now to discuss this further is Kiribati Minister for Women and Social Affairs, Ruth Kwansing. Good morning, Ruth.
Good morning, Kyle. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss the article.
No, and thank you for joining us. It's great to have you here. Question number one, can you walk us through the scale of Kiribati's poverty reduction and what does it mean when we say the national poverty rate has dropped by nearly 75%?
Well, in order to understand that, you need to understand what actually defines poverty. And globally, extreme poverty is benchmarked by the World Bank's International Poverty Line, which indicates that living on less than $2.15 per person per day, that's a threshold that indicates that basic survival needs are not being met. So when we talk about the national poverty rate in Kiribati dropping by 75%, it means that a large number of our citizens have been lifted out of poverty. So this is a result, obviously, of the strategic social protection initiatives. So when we talk about the cumulative effect of households receiving these benefits, we see a great shift in people's lives, which means that obviously fewer children are going hungry, missing school. It means that more families have access to clean water and electricity, and you know, obviously means that more people in Kiribati, wherever they live, have the resources they need to live with dignity.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. Now, I understand it was actually fishing that was central to playing a huge role in this, in the sense that revenues grew by US $43 million in 2010 and $210 million by 2024. So how did fishing play a role in poverty reduction?
Thanks for asking. Well, the growth of Kiribati's fishing revenues is played a huge role in this because it actually provides the funds for this social protection program. So using these revenues, that's where the reinvestment comes, going back into the people. So over the past 15 years, Kiribati has been able to expand the fishing revenue. As you mentioned, it's grown from $43 million in 2010 and is now up to $210 million as of last year. We view these resources as belonging to all of Kiribati, and therefore our government is committed to ensuring that these resources or these national treasures are directly benefiting everyone through a range of initiatives, not just the social protection program. There's also the copra subsidy, and there are other poverty alleviation tactics such as price control measures and fuel subsidies. We'll acknowledge the approach is unusual. We find that in many countries, when revenue increases, it's usually other things that increase, you know, some politicians' wages maybe. And dare I say it, in some places, we find that even corruption levels go up. So, you know, but we're quite proud in Kiribati. Not of the fact that our wages as politicians remain some of the lowest in the world, but certainly that our government, under the leadership of, you know, His Excellency Danis Mamo, made a very deliberate decision to reinvest these funds directly into social protection programs and produce safety nets that reduce poverty and inequality in Kiribati.
Yeah, I wanted to speak a little bit further about those social protection programs that you mentioned, such as the expanded senior citizens allowance, the support fund for the unemployed, and the disability support allowance. How do they all function?
The senior citizens allowance, this is a foundational program, and that provides a financial allowance to elderly citizens. So in 2020, this benefit level tripled to $100 a fortnight. It's the highest payment. It benefits around 9,500 people and it empowers our elderly to contribute financially to their households. Support fund for unemployment, this was introduced in 2019 and it pays $50 a month to our unemployed people in Kiribati. That's a bit of a social safety net, and that's provided to around 54,000 beneficiaries. It's not much, but it definitely takes the edge off a lot of families, especially when you can consider the fact that, and when I'm saying it's not much, I'm talking about the support for unemployment. But then when you think of the cumulative effect of, you know, households or large households that live together, it all adds up. And the disability support allowance, this was introduced also in 2019, and this program provides financial assistance to disabled individuals. And this is in addition to the support for unemployment or in addition to the senior citizens allowance. And that provides anywhere between $50 to $80, depending on the level of disability that they have.
And have the impacts of these programs been different across different regions and demographics, or did like urban and rural areas experience different outcomes, for instance?
We certainly seeing greater prosperity in the rural areas, we would say. Consider Kiribati, we have 21 inhabited islands that are scattered across 3.5 million kilometres of ocean. So just consider as well the sheer logistical efforts that go into delivering this as what is a cash payment. So with the outer islands, also consider that they receive the copper subsidy. And so you combine all of these things and they're finding that they're, you know, by their own words, they're starting to experience what they consider to be a bit of luxury because they can now afford items such as motorbikes. They're able to repay store credits. So we find that there's a large cash economy that has sprung up around these benefits. And businesses in outer islands are finding that they are starting to thrive now and no longer liquidating, you know, due to bad debts, because they also know that come, you know, the payment of benefit days, people can all sort of go in and repay those store debts and what have you. So we're actually starting to see more prosperity in the outer islands.
Yeah, and through it all, obviously, Kiribati has emerged as the largest investor in social assistance programs in the Pacific region, which is quite remarkable in a lot of ways. I guess looking ahead, what challenges could Kiribati face in sustaining these gains, if any?
Look, these are, you know, we're really excited about, you know, what we're seeing in these accomplishments, but in no way do we feel like we're anywhere close to being out of the woods, to be honest. But, you know, the work isn't done. The household income survey results showed that we still have 7,000 people that are still living below the national poverty line, and most of these are living in the urban area of South Tarawa. And also, so there's around 42% of those are in South Tarawa, with another almost 30% in the southern group of islands. And so there's a lot of pressure on these communities. And so we know that our future support is going to be most critical in those areas. And then the other 20-odd percent living just above the poverty line, they're still very vulnerable to falling back into hardship from shocks, whether it's a health emergency, climate-related issues or job loss. So we know that our population is still quite vulnerable, and they're still feeling, you know, the impacts of a rising cost of living, because, you know, the fuel subsidy has been removed and that has pushed the cost of living up. So while these social protection payments exist, when fuel prices go up, that still affects, you know, it affects, like, you know, the cost of electricity and other things. So we're still, you know, we don't feel like we're not vulnerable. We're just less vulnerable, is what I would say. We've also seen some alarming statistics that show misuse of this investment. There's a huge spike in kava consumption, which is in line with the introduction of the unemployment benefit. According to a report from Vanuatu, Kiribati was the largest consumer of Vanuatu kava in 2024. So there's a major concern with the negative impacts of that and misuse of that investment, where money is not being spent on what government is hoping it could do, which is, you know, obviously to provide better support for families, you know, to ensure that children are going to school and all the other things. So still a lot of challenges and vulnerabilities remain, you know, for our people.
And just finally, Ruth, because we are running out of time, what can other Pacific Island nations or even countries beyond the region learn from Kiribati's model of using natural resource revenues to fund inclusive social protection?
Definitely. I mean, our problems are all the same, particularly with our countries that are most vulnerable to the impacts of climate change. So I guess the core lesson is that strategic use of national income to invest in programs that support our vulnerable populations and reduce poverty. We always need to think about how the traps that emerge out of that exacerbate vulnerabilities for our elderly, people with disability, women and girls. And so all of these efforts, are quite deliberate to ensure that we're avoiding all those pitfalls that come with extreme poverty. Certainly as we think about how to build climate resilience in Pacific people, we know that climate resilience is going to come out of self-reliance. So all the efforts such as what Kiribati is doing in terms of being thoughtful about how we can do that to build self-reliance in people, we know that social protection is only part of that. But it's definitely something that we all need to think about to reduce those vulnerabilities and build capacity in people.
Look, absolutely. It's certainly a tough balance to strike, but it's great to see you guys are making headway in doing so. Ruth, that's all we've got time for on Pacific Beat this morning, but thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Carl. It's been a pleasure. Stick an eye to everyone.
Absolutely. That was Kiribati Minister for Women and Social Affairs, Ruth Kwansing, speaking with us there.